I am one of the pastors on staff here, and I'm really glad to be together today and to dig into the Bible. So if you have been with us for a while, we are in a sermon series called The Gospel According to Exodus. And over the last few weeks, we've been defining gospel as good news. And sometimes for me, what feels like really good news happens in an environment that's been shaped by bad news. Like, you know, that pit that you get in your stomach when you can tell that things might not be going your way. Like, you thought you were going to get an expensive traffic ticket, but you got a warning instead. It was in the mail. More seriously, though, like maybe you're holding some bad news from your doctor, but then you learn that the treatments worked. Or like the folks who are in our passage today, maybe you're looking at a losing battle, but then something changes. So in these times, good news is not just this like happy piece of information, but we can feel it in our heart and our mind and in our soul. So in our passage today, we get to the actual exodus of the Israelites or Hebrews from Egypt. And in some ways, this is the climax of the last couple of chapters. It's also a really pivotal moment in the history of the Israelites. So you might remember that we have been talking about the Exodus pattern as a threefold pattern of exile or death, deliverance, and restoration. Or put a different way in this context, it can be slavery, freedom, and promised land. And today we're going to be zooming in on deliverance and freedom, and because of that, there's a lot of really good news that is sprinkled in. So one of the purposes of this book of Exodus was for the Israelites to learn more about their God, who he was, more about his character, really get to know him. And as we, in 2023, get to learn more about God's character in Egypt and his leaving, his helping the folks leave, and how he acted towards the Israelites, we gain valuable insight for how God's character will be towards us. And as a spoiler alert, it's real good. So over the last couple of weeks, we've learned about the courage of the midwives. We've seen Moses' origin story. We've seen God speaking to Moses through a burning bush. And last week, we saw God's many signs and wonders through the land and the institution of the Passover. Today, we meet the Hebrews in the middle of a painful story, their own world of sitting in bad news for a really long time. So not only do they find themselves in a land that's not their own, but they are an enslaved people. They're tired, they're severely treated, and they're exploited, not just for what they could provide, but as a way to intentionally crush their collective spirit in an effort to prevent them from growing in numbers and spreading across the land and potentially becoming an enemy in war. We can imagine the stories about their God that have been passed down generation by generation, stories about God who was the creator and who had made promises to bless and to protect them. However, it had been hundreds of years without seeing the realization of these promises on top of a souring relationship with their hosts, the Egyptians. So it was not a good time for God's people. By this point in the story, we meet the Hebrews who have their leader, Moses, and Moses has met with the God of their ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And God has promised that his people are seen and that they're known and that they will soon be free in a new land. Unfortunately, when the Hebrews request respite from their labor in order to go serve and worship God, the response from their oppressor was harsher treatment. Though God had promised their deliverance to a land of their own through great acts of judgment, Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, refuses to let the Hebrews leave. And through Moses, God shows his power and his care for his people by sending signs or plagues on the land until Pharaoh relented and the people are released. And throughout this time, the Israelites are slowly growing in the understanding of a powerful God who calls them his own people and who has invited them to worship him. So this is where we get to pick up the story. We're on the evening of the 10th sign. It's the middle of the night, and they exited the land of captivity. They finally had their exodus. So there's over 600,000 people who are walking out of Egypt with their animals and their children and a bunch of unleavened bread. And Moses, in his old age, is in charge of carrying the bones of his ancestor, Joseph, who was so certain that God would remember his promise to his people and lead them to a new land that he made them promise to not leave his remains in Egypt once they were delivered. And then we get to this sentence. It's chapter 12, verse 41. It says, "At the end of 430 years, to the very day, all the Lord's hosts left Egypt." Hosts here is a military term, so we could substitute it for the word army or soldiers. When you hear the word army or soldier, you might get a certain image in your head. I generally think of somebody who's young-ish, healthy-ish, maybe somebody with some training in combat, or at the very least, somebody who's ready to protect themselves with like a weapon or some special skill. So one question here, I think the text is begging us to ask, is why would this group of people be called the army of the Lord? What type of army would be made up of tired men and women and children who were recently enslaved with their hands full of stuff in the middle of a move, literally fleeing their oppressor in the middle of the night? Continuing on, chapter 13 says this, "When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though it was shorter. God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the desert toward the Red Sea. The Israelites went up out of Egypt, ready for battle." Can we feel the tension building in the story? There's this ragtag group of folks who are described as God's soldiers that are finally leaving. And although they are literally sent out of Egypt, the text says that they left, quote, ready for battle. And God, in his thoughtfulness, saw two paths for them. One, shorter, would bring immediate armed conflict and fear and a desire to return to the place that they had just been delivered from. And the other one is longer and very desert-like, but it would bring something really different for the army. So from what we learned over the last couple of weeks and what the Israelites have been learning about God and his power, I think it's fair to say that God could have protected them on whichever road they found themselves. However, I think considering their hearts was a kindness and is a peek into the heart of God and the character of God. And so we're going to stop here for a little good news nugget for some of you today. So if it's for you, feel free to pick it up and ponder it. If it's not for you, totally okay. So it's very possible that the road that you are journeying on is not one that you would choose if you had the chance. You might feel pushed by circumstances outside of your control onto the path that you're currently walking. Maybe it's not the most efficient path to get you where you want to go. Maybe it's not the easiest path to escape where you are coming from. And maybe it's very desert-like without lots of trees or shade. But I would like us to consider that, like the Israelites, God might have intentionally placed you on this path as a kindness. And on this unchosen path, God still has your best interest at heart. Now, I understand that for some of us, that might not feel like good news. That could feel unnecessarily hard, and I think that's fair. And I don't know what we're all going through, but I would like to offer that even good things are sometimes difficult. So a few years ago, I went through a really dark time emotionally. Like somebody would ask me how I was doing and I would just cry. Or I would show up to a worship service and cry from the beginning of it through the end. It was super dark. And it was sparked by a romantic breakup and I had challenges with some of my friends' groups. And I was feeling directionless in my career path. But it grew more difficult because of all of the things that I was forced to learn about myself that I hadn't realized before. So that season exposed a couple of cracks in the foundation of my faith. I grappled with what it meant that God was good, not just to others, but to me. I had to learn what it meant to choose contentment
not just in my head, but in my heart. I was faced with the option to either accept or reject comfort in the way that God offered it. And I had to confront this clash that was happening with my deep desire to live out vulnerability in community with the emotional wounds that I had been carrying that limited how vulnerable I could actually be. I was stunted, and it informed the ways that I could receive support, not just from others, but even from God. However, due to being in this season, I sought to hear God's voice like I never had before, mostly because I hadn't felt the need. And on the other side of it, I know that this path in this metaphorical desert shaped my faith. It affected how I learned to walk with others in pain. It affected how seriously I took my own healing and my settledness in God. And so I used to have a mentor who would say, God is so much more kind than we can imagine. So I understand that a dark season might be a small example for those of us who are facing potentially life-altering situations. But if you would be open to it, I'd like to offer that God would love to meet you on whatever path you find yourself on and to show you his love and kindness for you there. So back to our Israelites who were traveling from place to place. And although it was alluded to a couple verses before, this next section helps us to see how God was both leading and journeying with his people. This is chapter 13, verses 21 and 22. It says, by day, the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so that they could travel by day or by night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. So we're going to pause here for a quick flashback. A few chapters back, Moses experienced God in the burning bush, and effectively, God says that he hears and he knows his people's suffering and that God himself will deliver them out of slavery and out of the land of Egypt. And then God calls Moses to lead his people out of Egypt. And in response to this very big ask, Moses says to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? So God does not answer that question with, you are a Levite. He doesn't say, well, your life was spared for this moment. He doesn't say, you can make a really great comeback from that failure you had a bunch of years ago. God responds to who am I with, I will be with you. And in the same way, as the Israelites are journeying along in the desert, God is giving them a visual reminder that he is with them. He's not just speaking through the voice of their leader, which is really great, but they learn that their God himself is a present leader, both day and night, and will guide and protect them. So, here's my second little good news nugget for some of us. Like Moses and the Israelites, our confidence isn't to be gained by who we are or what we can do well or by our background. I think especially some of us who are more competent kind of lean on that. But it's very possible that on our own, we might not be able to do the task in front of us or walk the road that's in front of us. And instead, our confidence can be based on the fact that we worship a God who leads us by being with us. We aren't ever left alone. And so I've sprinkled a couple of reflection questions that you might want to sit with. And the first one is this. How important is God's I will be with you to your daily life? Might God be inviting you to draw from him and his presence during moments of insecurity or when you're lacking in confidence or lacking in ability? And if so, how? So we're back to the Israelites who are continuing to travel when they get direction from God to turn around to the place that they just got delivered from. And the strategy was that Pharaoh would think the Israelites are wandering around lost in the desert and would pursue them, but in fact, Pharaoh himself would be trapped and God would get the glory. At the same time, Pharaoh and his team decided that it was a terrible idea to let all of their free labor go, so Pharaoh went to go get them, but not without getting fully dressed and actually ready for war. So Pharaoh got 600 of his best chariots, his horsemen, and it says every other chariot in Egypt to pursue the Israelites. And of course, he caught up to the folks who were leaving with all of their belongings on foot. And the Israelites got scared and they got a little sassy. Chapter 14 says, as Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. Moses answered the people, do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only be still. So when I was preparing this, I was kind of surprised by Moses' new boldness. This is a man who started out very fearful, complaining when things got better, when things did not get better, but they got worse, begging God to choose anybody but himself, but he starts to come into his own. And so Moses grows in the confidence that God did not bring them this far to leave them, that God would remain with them, and that if God promised them deliverance and land, it wouldn't mean a quick walk out of Egypt into a desert death. So he tells them, yeah, war is coming for you, but your job is just to be still. You're going to win, and you don't have to fight. The God who won your freedom from Egypt is going to finish this for you. So the new plan is get ready for war, even though they are underprepared, and they are tired and worn down from decades of servitude, and meet the oppressors who are dressed and ready for battle. And then, instead of hiding or fighting, the job for this army is to be still. And the reason was that the Lord, their God, would fight on their behalf. But that feels like a big risk. The Israelites had seen God's power in the signs that he showed through Moses, but this feels different. This feels like they would need God to show up or else they would be slaughtered. So I don't think the Israelites have a bunch of choices here, and the Bible doesn't say, but I would guess that though afraid, some of them might have been resigned to whatever fate met them in the desert. Some might have felt hopeful looking to the cloud that hadn't left them. Some might feel cautiously optimistic as they think about death that had just passed over their house. So God tells Moses to act, and reminiscent of the first powerful signs and plagues, Moses miraculously engages with the water. This time, though, instead of the water turning to blood or bringing up frogs, the waters would move. This is chapter 14, verses 19 to 22. Then the angel of God, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved from in front of them and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to one side and light to the other, so that neither went near the other all night long. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and a wall of water on their left. So without leaving them, God moves to stand in between them and their enemy. And in addition to being this cloud that separates the two armies, this God who is protector is also the God who is creator and spoke light into existence. Like he did in the beginning, he causes darkness and light to separate, but this time it separates the two armies. And throughout the night, separated and protected by God, the Israelites wait. And throughout the night, God is working. This protector God is also creator God who in the beginning spoke dry land into existence in the middle of chaotic waters, and he does it again. And the Israelites walk through the middle of a wall of water on dry land. And though miraculous, this doesn't quite save our Hebrews. The Egyptians, thinking that they had trapped the Israelites, saw them escaping and then logically followed the Israelites into the sea that was split. But quite similar to the last acts of power by God, these groups would experience God's signs and wonders in really different ways. This is verse 24 of chapter 14. It says, "During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He jammed the wheels of the chariot so that they had difficulty driving, and the Egyptians said, 'Let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt.' Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen.' Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak, the sea went back to its place. The Egyptians were fleeing toward it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen. The entire army of Pharaoh had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived. And when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant." So God's fighting looks really different from people's fighting, right? He's got the power to turn the Egyptians' tools and weapons of war into instruments of their own death and destruction. And the God who has the power to split the waters would obviously have the power to send the water back to its place. The Israelites defeated their oppressors not by skill or by technology or by effort or strategy or heart. They won the war that was coming to them because their God was fighting for them. So that's a story about how God's people walked out of Egypt, not just being delivered from slavery, but from their oppressor. And there are really good themes and nuggets of good news and callbacks, but what is the main point? What were God's people supposed to learn about him beyond freedom from slavery and a rescued life? What was the takeaway? So I think the main point of the story is this, and it's a lot of words, but it's as skinny as I could get it, so I'm sorry. God, who is unmatched in power, keeps the promises he made to the Israelites and their ancestors and brings glory to himself by fighting on behalf of them, the oppressed. So this is really good news for the recently released Israelites. They've learned that the God that they're going to serve is not only powerful, but he's trustworthy. And he's worthy of their worship and their allegiance. Even though they had been suffering a really long time, God did not forget them and he would not leave them. No matter where they are led, they can trust that their God can deliver them from terrible and impossible situations and has the power to miraculously intervene. Further, the promise he made to the forefathers was still good. This is not just a promise of nationhood. It was not just a promise of blessing, but the promise was that through this group of people, all people of the earth would be blessed. So why is that good news for us? Well, we believe that through Jesus, this God is now our God. We believe that Jesus' birth and death and resurrection allow us too to be God's people. We believe that Jesus is Emmanuel, and that means he is God with us. We believe that after he rose from death, Jesus ascended to heaven and he sent his Holy Spirit to live inside of each one of us who recognize him as Savior and deliverer. And for those reasons, what we've learned about God's character and his treatment towards his people is still true, and it's applicable to our lives. Namely, God is still powerful. God is still creator, and he is in the process of making all things new. God is still a keeper of his promises, and he's one that we can put confidence in. He's still able to deliver and miraculously intervene. He is still a God who leads by journeying with and has good for us on whatever path we find ourselves. He's still one who gets the glory as deliverer. He is still worthy of worship and allegiance. He still aligns himself with the oppressed and will fight on their behalf and will judge those who come against him. And so because of that, I would like to offer this as a takeaway for us. God, who is unmatched in power, keeps his promises and brings glory to himself by fighting on behalf of those oppressed. And if that's true, then what? So first, I think this is really good news for any of us who feel pressed in different areas of life. So it could be any number of things, like sickness or finances, maybe societal forces or feeling stuck in sin. So a good news nugget for those of us who find ourselves in this camp is that God does not forget, and he has not forgotten you. He knows, and he hears, and he remembers. And where you are may look really bad, and it may look impossible, but God has not forgotten you. And this God, the God of miracles, will fight for you too. Check out Psalm 146. It says, "Blessed are those whose help is the Lord of Jacob, whose hope is in the Lord their God. He is the maker of heaven and earth and the sea and everything in them. He remains faithful forever. He upholds the cause of the oppressed and gives food to the hungry. The Lord sets the prisoner free. The Lord gives sight to the blind. The Lord lifts up those who are bowed down. The Lord loves the righteous. The Lord watches over the foreigner and sustains the fatherless and the widow. But he frustrates the way of the wicked." The good news is that God is the one who is doing the work on behalf of those of us who need his help. So if you're coming in feeling pressed today, here's a couple reflection questions you might want to sit with. You can ask, "God, help me find, help me name where I'm feeling pressed or where I need your deliverance." And then offer. And then ask, "What do you have for me today?" And then receive. And a quick word of encouragement for those of us who feel pressed today, don't lose hope. Ask the Lord for help and look for his deliverance, because our God works for freedom. I think this is also really good news, though, for those of us who are not feeling particularly pressed in this moment. So maybe you're healthy and your finances are in a really good place, or you're well received by society, or you're in a great place with the Lord and you don't feel stuck in sin. And if that's you, I think there might be an invitation for you as well. Join the Lord in the work that he is doing to free people from bondage. So when you encounter somebody who is pressed in a way that maybe you're not, be open to the invitation of the Lord to use your time and your resources and your energy to partner with God in the work that he is already doing to bring freedom. And I want to be clear here that I don't think there's two groups, like the folks who have it together and those who don't. You might be feeling really pressed financially, but thriving spiritually, and be invited into the work that the Lord is doing to bring freedom to people. So please don't wait until you've arrived or like all of the categories of your life are in order until you begin joining in what God is already doing. So that's the freedom of the Lord at the individual level. But what about all these systems? Do we believe that it's possible that the Lord works for the freedom of groups of people who are oppressed? I would say like a resounding yes. I think that's what we saw in the story today. I would run out of time listing groups who are oppressed by structures and systems, but here are a few to consider. We know about modern-day slaves or people who are fleeing their home country because of persecution or war or violence. We know about people who are working a full-time job or jobs and can't make rent or feed their family on their income. We know about discrimination. We've seen generational poverty. We know about state-sponsored brutality. We know about people who have to choose between their medicine and a meal. So I think these are signs that things are not as they should be. How might God be calling us to engage with and to destroy systems of oppression that touch our own lives? And I would say that I think this is kingdom work. This is the work of believers when we pray, "Your kingdom come and your will be done on earth as in heaven." And something that's really beautiful about this is that you meet God there because he's already doing the work. So this sermon is not just a plug for the restorative justice work that's happening at the Evanston Vineyard, but it is one of the on-ramps if you're interested. So if you want to help get food or resources or clothing for people who need, come join us. If you want to join the group that serves folks experiencing homelessness in the park, we'd love to have you. If you want to help us host an overnight shelter or start a legal clinic, or you want to think about hunger at a policy level, if you want to join groups who are supporting refugees and immigrants, or join the groups that are working towards housing and addressing homelessness, or do the work of racial reconciliation, or learn to walk with people who are hurting or pressed or oppressed, we would love to have you. If you're interested, there's a table right outside of faithful volunteers who can get your information and help to either connect you with work that's happening here in the church or outside of it. So, another couple set of reflection questions. You can ask God, God, what's your invitation for me to join in the work that you are already doing? And I would say maybe be open to seeing things in a new way or seeing things deeper. Also be open to maybe not taking anything on, but taking something off or not participating in something. And so one final note, as we move to close, we have talked a lot about freedom and breaking the chains of injustice and bondage and oppression, and these are really good things and they reflect the kingdom of God. However, in our passage today, freedom is not an end to itself. The Israelites were freed from slavery and abuse in order to be freed to worship God. And in the same way, as we seek freedom for ourselves and we join God in championing the freedom of those around us, know that we are ultimately being freed into grateful worship and praise and into continuing to follow him and into deeper relationship with him. So here's my last set of reflection questions. Ask God about a time that you got free, that he got you either unstuck or unbound, and then ask him how he wants you to engage that. Maybe it's a grateful heart. Maybe it's a song. Maybe it's a story shared with somebody about how you know a God who delivers. And if you're here today and you would not consider yourself a follower of Jesus, here's my last nugget of good news for you. This God who is powerful and leads and desires to be present with us when things are going well and when they are not, is a God who cares for you and who longs for your freedom and is inviting you into relationship with him. So if you're interested in saying yes to this invitation, I'd like to invite you to pray this prayer with me in your heart, and then I'll close us. So God, thank you for who you are. I want the freedom that is found in you. I want deliverance from sin and from my old way of being. I say yes to your invitation to be my leader and to be with me. Help me to know your love for me today. Amen.